Alright, so those who can sit through a second hour of halacha, so we'll move through. So we'll do some meat and milk, some basa b'chal questions in the kitchen. The basics you all know, you can't eat milk and meat together. But that doesn't prevent the fact that we have lots and lots of questions which come in regularly about all sorts of different areas. So the one I wanted to start with today, cooking tar foods in our meat and milk utensils. Many of us do not have a separate fleet of tarv dishes. You know, some of us started with them. They very quickly became either milchiks or fleishiks, and now we cook tarv foods all the time. Now, what's the status of these foods that have been used in cooked in milk or meat utensils? What can we use them with? What can we not use them with? And how does that work? So we'll do some of that, and then that'll be a springboard for the future weeks. We'll discuss other things that come off of this as well. So we'll do two cases with questions which we get regularly, and use that as the basis for working this through. So case number one, I made noodles in a meat pot with the intention of serving them on Shabbos, but I forgot to serve them. So now I have a bag in my refrigerator of plain noodles cooked up in a meat pot that I cooked Thursday, wherever I cooked them, Wednesday, Thursday to serve. Full bag of noodles. And now, what do I do with this bag of noodles that didn't end up being served? It's a big pot, and that, so I want to make macaroni and cheese for the kids for lunches during the week, or for myself, or for whatever. Can I use those same noodles which were cooked in my meat pot to then make macaroni and cheese with them during the week? Now, all right, there you go. That's easy. The answer is no. The first important point to this question is the fact that I specifically wrote in the question, I forgot to serve them. Because if you did serve them at your meat table, then that already has a status of meat. That's a different question. That's not what we're talking about. Once they go out onto a table in which you're serving meat, and people are using the same serving spoons to take from the chicken and the gravy, and they're dipping it here and dipping it there, those foods already have a status of meat. Challah, which goes onto your table, has a status of meat. That's already a different question than we're discussing. We're not discussing once it's been brought to the table and it gets all, even though we all have very clean tables, and of course, and everyone uses the same silverware at the same time, it doesn't always work out that way, especially if there are children around. We're talking about where it was just cooked in the meat pot, it was put in the fridge as a plain bag of noodles, and now you want to know what you can do with it during the week. Case number one. Case number two, similar case. I bought a sorbet that contains no dairy products but was made on dairy equipment. The famous DE, which has been taken out of circulation primarily by the OU as a label, even though we still have the concept. We still have foods which are made on dairy equipment. You can call up the companies and they'll say there's no dairy in it, but it says on the label this product was manufactured on equipment that manufactures nuts and meats and or nuts and milk and whatever the other allergens are that they have. So now I have this power of product made on dairy equipment. So can I use that for my dessert after my meat meal? Can I put on my Shabbos table for desserts a sorbet which says OUD on it? But I know I called up the company or it says that there's no dairy in it, but it was made on dairy equipment products. Can I eat that for desserts after my meat meal? Now these are very similar questions. They'll be different, we'll see as we go through the halachas, but they're both basically asking a power of food which has been made in the first case, power of noodles made in a meat pot. And the second question is very similar. I have a power of sorbet which was made on dairy equipment. Can I use them after my different types of meals? Those are the questions which come up regularly. I'm sure you've had them before. And we'll work through them today. Okay, now to answer these two questions, there are basically two primary issues which we will work through. Today will be a little bit more in the halacha of breaking down those two concepts because these are going to be the springboards for discussions in the following weeks also as far as this works. We'll discuss like the French toast question is the same question. If I made challah, that's going to be a different, we'll get to that next week also. Where I baked in a fleishig oven, can I make a dairy type of French toast with the challah which was baked in a meat oven? I mean, a similar question that's going to have to get into a bigger discussion of ovens, which we'll have next week also, Mirtz Hashem. Okay, but in any case, so those are the two cases we'll work through. So the first issue is this concept of the transfer of taste. We'll just start with that as the basic. What's the source that when you cook things together, you have taste transferring from one food to another food into the pot? The whole idea of a milchik pot and a fleishik pot. The source of that is basically from the halacha of basar b'chol. You know how to cook milk and meat together. What happens if I do cook milk and meat together? Of course, you're not allowed to do that. Now I had a milk base, a liquidy milk base, and I put meat in there and I cook it up. Now I take the meat out, and I have the milk and meat separate. I just have the pot of milk, and I just have my meat. Can I eat them now separate? Why not? That's the source. The fact that the Torah says each one now inherently becomes prohibited, even when they've been separated, is the source that when you cook things, there's a transfer of taste from one to the other in a halachic sense. Whether or not, we all know that we do that on purpose when we cook things together, there's a taste transfer. But in a halachic sense, whether or not you know that if they're not there, there's a concept that the taste becomes infused from one entity into the other. That even though they're now separate, the milk has the taste of the meat in it, the meat has the taste of the milk in it, and therefore they're both inherently forbidden even after they've been separated. Now that concept happens to the pot as well. Just like the taste of the milk goes into the meat, so if you just were to boil up milk in a pot, the taste of that milk would also enter into the pot as well. And that's why we have milchic pots, because there's now a milk taste in that pot. Similarly, if you cook up meat in a pot, the taste of the meat also transfers into the pot, and that's why we have our concepts called gleishik pots. However, there's a major distinction, this is moving into section 2, there's a major distinction whether or not I'm transferring food from one food item into another food item, or whether or not I'm transferring taste from a food item into a pot. Meaning, whether or not I'm cooking a cholent. So when I have a cholent, I have meat, but I have lots of other stuff in my cholent. I have beans and potato and barley and all the other stuff. So what the potato that's cooking in my cholent will also absorb the taste of the meat, as opposed to, similarly, the pot will also absorb the taste of the meat. Now there's a big distinction in what we're talking about, whether or not we have food that's absorbed taste, or whether or not we have a pot that has absorbed taste. It was anybody? Where so far? Okay, so far so good. That's the difference between what we call benyomo and eino benyomo. Some benyomo, which will define which has been used within 24 hours, or eino benyomo, that which has not been used within 24 hours. And let's just read this through. So one major distinction is between transferring from a food to a pot, or whether or not you're transferring food to another food, is that when food is transferred to a food item, the taste will always remain potent, meaning the taste that's transferred. So for example, in our cholent. So I have meat cooking up in my cholent, and I also have a potato cooking in my cholent. So what's the status of that potato? I take out the potato, I wash it off, and it's just a potato. But the potato has been cooking with the cholent. What's the status of that potato? It's fleishik. It's meat. Because it's been cooking with the meat pot, so the meat taste absorbs into the potato. What about 2 days later? What's the status of that potato? It's still meat. It doesn't make a difference that it's been more than 24 hours. There's no such rule, which you've all heard, 24 hours. That doesn't make a difference. When it's a food item that's absorbed the taste from another food item, it always remains and will always remain fleishik. But if I then cook that potato in another pot, that potato would make my second pot because this is a meat potato. Now we are so stringent, by the way, on that potato, that if you eat that potato, we consider it meat to the point that you have to wait 6 hours till eating dairy. Even though all that I ate was a potato. I washed it off, it's just a potato. If you eat a food that was cooked together with meat, it has a status of meat. Real meat, real deal. 6 hour waiting period. Now that has a lot of applications. This comes up all the time, which is not a topic of discussion for today per se, but it is related. Whenever you have a big pot and you have lots of food cooking and you have a stew or whatever it is, if it's cooking together with meat, that entire dish is now meat and has a 6 hour rule involved in it. So there's no just sneaking out a potato shalosh at a time out of your cholent pot or out of your other stew. That's a 6 hour waiting period if you're planning on ice cream at night for Lava Malka, think twice before you have that leftover potato. Yeah?
I have a question. If somebody, well, I know the answer, but if somebody is cooking, for example, eggs within the shell, inside the cholent, and then you're peeling off the shell and eating the egg, the same thing?
I think we would still consider that, yeah. Pretty sure we do. But that's when you're transferring from one food product to another food product. That transfer will take and remain always. The potato is always now considered a meat potato, and it has all the trimmings of meat, in that it even brings along with it the 6 hour waiting period. Now, the distinction is if you transfer from a food to a pot. So if I'm just cooking up meat, what's the status of my pot? My pot also now absorbs taste from the meat. But here, because the taste is not sitting in a food item, it's sitting in a hard metal pot, here the halacha says it cannot remain there forever. It doesn't remain in a potent state of valid taste that we deal with in halacha for an infinite amount of time like we would in the potato. That potato will forever be fleishik, no matter how long amount of time passes before you eat it. But in a pot, Here we have what's known as a longer period of time, and we'll define exactly how long that is. At that point, it becomes what's known as pagum. Now, pagum means stale, literally, or impotent. It doesn't have the same ability. It's the way the halacha describes it is that if that taste now transfers back into another food, it actually has a detrimental effect on the second food that you cook in. There are lots of food like that. This is actually based on another halacha, which women never like to hear, but was once an applicable halacha, if a, let's say, a rodent of sorts would fall into your chilling pot. Just, you know, for argument's sake. Let's just say, heaven forbid it should happen. Let's say it happened. So if it happens, so the rodent, of course, is us. You're not allowed to eat a rodent, that's for sure. But what happens if I now remove the rodents? And I know, just follow me, I know, that's just theoretically speaking. I remove the rodents, and now I have this big cholin pot that was my entire week's worth of savings, you know, goes into, and this is going to be my food for the week. What's the status of my cholin that's now been cooking with this rodent? No, you're trash. So theoretically, it's actually not. It's not trash for the following reason. Just like when you cook meat, the meat transfers from one food to another food, so the taste of the rodent, so to speak, might possibly transfer as well. But that's a bad taste. It doesn't enhance your food at all by having a rodent cooking your cholin pot. It's called nosein tam l'fgam. It actually gives a bad flavor or taste to whatever it is that's being cooked in. So we're not concerned with taste that's pagum, that's bad, it's stale, it's inappropriate, it makes things worse. And therefore, halachically speaking, even though as long as I now take the rodent out and all that's left is the taste of the rodents, that doesn't forbid the food. You can eat it. In other words, you may not want to eat it, but you can eat it. It's not a halachic problem, even though the taste is in there. If I dropped in milk, if I dropped in a ball of cheese into my cholent, so then my cholent becomes also because the taste of the cheese goes in there, and it's a halachic problem. The rodent is not a halachic problem because the taste isn't good. No, that's what I'm saying. You know, a taste which is not good is not dealt with. In other words, it's not dealt with. So in other words, it's a osur tam, the taste is forbidden, but because I'm not actually eating the food item which is forbidden, it's just the taste of it. Taste which is bad isn't dealt with. Therefore, your cholin would be halachically permissible. So if you wanted to donate it to your local yeshiva because they're not going to care or notice, you're allowed to do that. It's fine. It's halachically mutter. It's gross to us in today's world. But there was a time in our history where we wouldn't have been as grossed out about this as we are today, and it's a good thing. But, yeah.
How about if a bug lies in the beginning of the
same thing. Same thing. In other words, you don't have to be concerned about numbers. Is it 60? Is it less than 60? As long as you get it out, and I'm not eating the object itself, all that I would be eating would be taste which may or may not have come off of it, since a bug also gives a pugum taste, a bad taste to the food around it, and then it doesn't matter. It's not a halachic problem. As long as you get that item out, that's fine. That same principle is what's at use when it sits in the pot for more than 24 hours. Taste alone, meaning after the item is, the pot has been cleaned and it's been cooked and now there's taste absorbed into the walls of the pot, after a long period of time goes by, that taste that's in the walls of the pot isn't considered to give a better taste to my subsequent foods that I cook. It's going to be a pogum. It's already a stale taste. And therefore, the halacha does not deal with the taste which will come back out of a pot that has sat for a long period of time and is already now considered a putrid, bad, stale taste coming out of the pot. It has the same status in halacha as, you know, a bug or a rodent or something which gives off a bad taste to the food.
I'm lost.
So you're nauseous?
No, I'm lost.
You're lost, yeah.
If the pot's got something wrong in it, you leave it for 24, you clean it and leave it for 24 hours, it is good or not?
Yeah, it's totally fine. In other words, as far as the halacha is concerned, we're going to get to where the rabbis came and the chachamim added rabbinic law to this. As far as the Torah is concerned, if you cook something in a pot, cleaned it out, and waited for an extended period of time, let's call it 24 hours for now, any taste that's left in that pot is now stale, it's pogum, and it cannot affect any other subsequent food.
So does that mean that if you leave your pot for 24 hours, you can switch it between milk and milk?
Technically, you could have done that. As far as the Torah is concerned, if there was no rabbinic law added to this, yes, that would have been true. We will get that. It's important. The reason why I'm stressing that is because that is going to be the basis of why, if it has been done accidentally, we'll have what to talk about. The halacha is, once the taste has sat in the walls of the pot for 24 hours, it cannot affect something else, because it's already a stale taste. Yeah.
But it's accidentally, more than a drop of milk that went into a place of pot. And let's say that you accidentally cooked meat and milk together or something.
Mm-hmm.
Then that pot has to be kosher, even if you wait 24 hours, right?
That's the rabbinic, same rabbinic. In other words, whatever went in there, I don't care if you took a non-Jewish, went over to your non-Jewish neighbor, and you said, you have a pot that I could borrow, and he says, sure, and he gives you a pot, and he cooked pork in it 20 minutes ago. So you take your pot, you clean it, you put it on your shelf for a day. That pot, as far as the Torah is concerned, cannot affect your food the following day, because the taste which will come out of that pot is invalid in halacha. I'm not saying you can cook in it. You will have to kosher it, yes. I'm saying the bottom line is, the taste which comes out of that pot, because it has sat for more than 24 hours, is a stale, invalid, non-helpful taste, and does not forbid the food that it will then subsequently enter into.
But you just said it still has to be kosher.
That's correct. Hang on, we're just going to go a little bit further. I think it will become clear. In other words, because we all have a lot of pre-existing information, it makes it confusing to go in order, because there is no order. You know a lot already, but let's just try to follow it through. You'll see, I hope, that it will make sense. Now, what I want to stress, and the reason why I keep trying to say it this way, is that the taste is there in the pot. It's just what we call pogum. It's just stale. Is important that it's not that the taste disappears after 24 hours. It's not that it just like goes away. It's there, it's just it becomes a little bit stale. It has a not pleasant effect on the subsequent foods that you cook. And the reason why I stress it that way is because there are certain types of food which have the ability to invigorate stale taste. And that's what you're all familiar with, the idea of onions. The reason why we're all concerned with onions and sharp foods have an ability to bring back otherwise dead taste. So that's why we'll talk about, I'm just introducing, we'll talk about this more in next week or in 2 weeks as well. This is why we're always concerned with the two questions that we'll ask. Anytime you call your local Orthodox rabbi, this is what I did, I'll ask you, when was the last time you cooked in your pot? And were there any onions involved? Were there any garlic? Any other sharp foods? Sharp foods have an ability, because of their sharpness, to reinvigorate old and otherwise stale taste. But that's because the taste is still in there, it just became stale. But putting that aside for now, just introducing something which we'll talk about later. So I have my pot going back into section 2A, the little two eyes there. Taste is transferred to a pot and remains there for a longer period of time, so it loses its potency. Therefore, it has a negative effect on subsequent foods cooked in the pot, and taste which negatively impacts other foods is not forbidden. That's what we've said so far. Now that my taste in my pot, once it's been there for a long period of time, is invalid. It doesn't have a pleasant concept to it, and therefore it doesn't affect negatively any of the other foods that I will subsequently cook. Now, first of all, let's define what's considered a longer period of time. How long does it have to sit there? And there's a major, major machlokas, a big dispute amongst the poskim exactly how long this is. Some were lenient. There are a number of significant poskim from the Rishonim already who held that all that needs to happen is you go over one full night. If you cooked on during the day at some point, on Thursday afternoon, and then it sits through the night. By Friday morning already, even if it's less than 24 hours, that's already considered pogum, and the taste would be considered stale just going through a single night. We generally are much more strict than that, but it's worth knowing that there's no clear defined period exactly. It's a dispute. We generally hold in a lechumra, and a stringent approach, that the amount of time it takes to become stale is a full 24-hour period from the last time that you cooked until the next time that you cook. Within that 24 hours, the taste will remain potent, will remain valid, will remain with a positive effect on subsequent foods that are cooked, and only after the 24-hour period does it become already invalid. Now, the terms which we've just been working through, just to define them, so if it's been used within 24 hours, that's what's known as a ben yomo. That's the phrase. Just to be familiar with, ben yomo means that it's been used within the day. It's been cooked within a day. Now, this would apply both to meat pots or milk pots or non-kosher pots. It's been used within the 24-hour period for whatever it was that it has been used for. And if it has not been used, that's referred to as an Eino Ben Yomor. That's just the terms, just to be familiar with. Those are going to be the first questions that anyone asks you. Was it a Ben Yomor or an Eino Ben Yomor? Was it been used within 24 hours or has it been used? It's been more than 24 hours since it's been used for milk or meat. Now, this brings us to letter E, which is what all of you were jumping all over, and it is true. According to the Torah, any meat pot that hasn't been used for 24 hours can be used intentionally for milk. You would be allowed to do that. It is absolutely permitted as far as Ikar Hadin, primary Torah halacha would be. It is fine to do that, and that would even be true for non-kosher items as well. You'd be allowed to buy any pot at a garage sale, and it's just, you need to tovel it, which is a separate halacha, but kashering it would not be necessary as long as it's been used for more than 24 hours. Now, that would be, technically speaking, what would be, now what's the obvious problem if we were to actually practice that way? We would be very confused, because we would have one set of dishes, and all we'd have to remember is, just make sure you wait 24 hours in between your dishes, and you could switch back and forth from meat to milk, milk to meat, you could borrow from your non-Jewish neighbor. Anything would go as long as you waited 24 hours from its previous use. As you could well imagine, that wouldn't really go over very well, there'd be all sorts of problems. So Chazal came in and basically said, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to use a fleishig pot for your milk, you're not allowed to use your milchig pot for meat, and you're certainly not to use a non-kosher pot until it's been kosher. So there's a requirement to kosher before using, but that's all talking with chatchila, intentionally. Before anything has been done, when you open up your cupboard and you want to use a pot, you have to have separate pots. Even though technically it would be unnecessary, because it's been more than 24 hours since I've cooked, so I don't have to kosher it, but Chazal established that you're not allowed to use a fleishik pot for milk, or a milchik pot for meat without koshering it. One more second, I'll get a question. What this is relevant to is if you made a mistake. What happens if I forgot, I took out the wrong pot, and I cooked milk in a meat pot that hasn't been used for more than 24 hours? So again, it's not our question is going to be pyre stuff. What happens if I made a mistake, and I cooked up a pot of milk in a meat pot, and it hasn't been used for 24 hours? What do you think the halacha is? It's correct. Believe it or not. It's okay. Because you weren't supposed to have done that. You needed to have kashered the pot before cooking milk. Because it's a meat pot, and once we establish a pot as milk or meat, that's what it is until you kasher it, so that you don't come to get confused. I made a mistake, and I cooked the milk. So now the status of my milk has absorbed taste, but what kind of taste did it absorb? Not potent taste. The taste is already pogum. It's already stale. So you can't affect food with an impotent taste. It doesn't work. So my milk, did the event, I weren't allowed to do this, but I did. What's the status of my milk? Your milk is technically okay. What about your pot?
Yeah.
Right, your pot needs to be kosher now, because your pot now has milk taste absorbed in it from this most recent cooking. It's got meat taste absorbed in it, which is stale, and you're certainly not allowed to use that. You can't use that for anything. You can't use that for par stuff. You can't use it for milk stuff, meat stuff. That would need to be kashered. But the milk which you had cooked accidentally would be okay because of this rule that says, since it's been 24 hours, the taste is not valid anymore. It's stale. It cannot affect. It just can't affect anything that it's going to go into. Second, yeah?
Just a clean pot, like it's clean.
Yes.
24 hours.
Yes.
You used it, or just if it was hot. Like if it was hot from fire. Let's say
it's a good question. There's a distinction between clean and not clean if you subsequently cook in it. In other words, there are two issues. As far as your question goes, when do we consider it as going absorbing into the pot? That would be from the time that it's hot. If you were to subsequently cook with a pot that wasn't entirely clean, then it doesn't matter when the last time you cooked, then it's not a clean pot. And when we're going to be talking about cooking carbs, so then you'll probably go from when you cooked in it, yeah. Yeah, and as if it's... Yeah, unless it's a liquid. Because if it's just a caked on schmutz that you haven't cleaned yet, then that's not going to absorb in. Liquids have a separate halacha. Liquids, if they sit for a significant amount of time, also have the ability to absorb into the pot.
So then it's 24 hours after you've taken the liquid out?
If you had a soup that sat in a pot for an extended period of time, that taste absorbs into the walls of the pot, even if it's not hot.
Okay.
That's another distinction. How does taste absorb into pots? So there are a couple of different ways. One is heat. Another one is just sitting. If it just soaks in the pot for a significant amount of time, that also absorbs. And you have sharpness with cutting with a knife, a sharp food. There are a couple of different ways of absorbing. So if it just... If it was a little bit dirty, but it wasn't a liquid that was soaking, then just when it was hot.
And contrary, that you just need cleaning, waving, and parboiling, or does that if you get some?
Oh no! If you needed to kosher something, when I say kosher, it means with hot boiling hot water.
And a rock or not a rock?
It depends on the situation. That was separate shmooze in terms of hopeless koshering, depending on what it would be. It depends on the size. That's different question. Yeah. If you can't kosher it, right. In other words, your milk, that is, you have a type of cow that you can't kosher, in that situation that I created, you have a very funny situation of drinking the milk and throwing out your pot. My milk is fine, but the pot's ruined. And that's because of the combination of rabbinic and Torah law. I'll pee the Torah, as far as the Daraisa halacha goes, the taste that was in there can't affect my milk. But because of the Rabbanan who said, even though you have stale meat in the pot, you got to deal with that. And now have stale meat, fresh milk, and the pot's ruined. And if you can't kosher, right? That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, so by mistake you made a cream of mushroom soup in a blanched pot, and now you've already served it in bowls. The bowl, the cream, the soup was fine, the bowls were fine. What about a metal ladle that went into the pot?
What's with that, milchiks or fleishiks?
your soup
is milchik, right? Because the pot, the only thing meat here is the taste absorbed in the pot, right? And that's invalid. We deal with it, meaning I have to kosher it, but it's really not valid, which means the contents of my pot are all milchiks.
So you don't have to kosher the
ladle. If the ladle was milchiks going in, right? That's correct. For the same reason, that the stale taste inside of your pot can't affect that. If the ladle was fleish, then you have a much bigger problem. Right now I have... It depends when the last time the ladle was used. If the ladle also hasn't been used in 24 hours, and even though your soup has gotten it from two separate sources, it got stale taste from the pot and stale taste from your ladle, your soup will still be okay. B'dievet. First question anyone is going to ask you, if you say, I made a mistake in my kitchen, is going to be, when was the last time you used it? This is the first and most important rule, because if it's been more than 24 hours, then right away, you weren't supposed to have done whatever you did, but that taste cannot affect secondary foods. It just doesn't have that ability. Unless there are onions, again, we'll deal with that later. If that would be, that's the one variable that sometimes throws us off, is we do often cook with onions and garlic and things, but leaving that aside, right. Okay. Number three. Okay, that's the first issue of 24 hours, ben yomo, more than 24 hours, ain't a ben yomo, as that will affect pots and foods. Now, the second major issue is what's known as nat bar nat. And nat bar nat is an acronym which stands for no sing tam bar no sing tam. No sing tam means giving taste. Bar, which means like literally the son of, another example of no sing tam, which basically means how many times can food taste transfer? As we've been talking, where I have a pot, I cooked the meat, and the taste went from my meat into my pot. How many times can that taste continue to transfer from one place to another place? It went from my meat, and then it went into my pot, and then it's going to go into another food. How long of a shelf life, not in time, but in transfers? So in other words, going with the letter A, let's assume we're all within 24 hours. And as the first variable that we just finished discussing is a time variable. Taste only remains valid for 24 hours. Once 24 hours pass, the taste is invalid, it doesn't have that strength, it doesn't have that potency, it's not dealt with. There's a second feature that we have to deal with, which is numbers of transfers. How long, I mean, this is a little flavor, it's a taste, whatever exactly that is, that's transferring from my meat into my pot, and how many times can you do that before it loses its ability to have an effect on anything? Reading through that. So, in other words, we have here, after a pot has absorbed the meat taste, it's forbidden to cook milk in the same pot. That we know, because the taste from the meat, which has now gone into my pot, will then come back out into my milk, and that creates a problem. So our question then becomes, what if instead of cooking milk, I now cook a parvitam, I have boiled water, scrambled eggs, what's the status of that water, which has been cooked in a meat pot, what's the status of my potato, of my eggs, whatever it is. Again, this is all within 24 hours. So it's Thursday night, I'm cooking for Shabbos, I cook up a meat dish, clean out my pots, and then right after that, boil up potatoes. So I have in the same meat pot, which has been used within 24 hours for meat, so meat taste went from my meat into my pots, and now within 24 hours, the same night, I cook potatoes, so the meat taste will then transfer from my pot into the potato. How long can I do that? Do I need to be concerned with that? What's the status of my potato? So just again to frame this, as opposed to if I cooked my potato with the meat, so that the meat transfer went directly from the meat into the potato, there we said the potato is fleishig. It's so fleishig you have to wait 6 hours after you ate the potato. But here there's a step in between. Instead of going from directly the meat into the potato, went from the meat into my pot, and then from my pot into my potato. What now is the status of my potato? So the Gemara discusses this in Maseches Chulin, and the Gemara says explicitly that a hot piece of fish placed on a meat plate may be eaten directly with milk. So let's absorb what that was saying. So you have, I have my, now put, this is putting aside our fish and meat issues, which we know is a separate issue. We're not dealing with fish, eating fish with meat, just the milk and meat issue. Fish is basically being used here as an egg, or as a potato, in this particular example. That gets into a whole another discussion, which is not for now. But that's what the Gemara says. So I have here, the meat taste went into the plate. The plate is in effect like our pots. I had meat on a hot piece of steak on a plate. So the meat taste went from the meat into the plate. And then onto that same plate, I put a fish. So that the taste of the meat now went from the meat into the plate, from the plate into my fish. What can I do with this fish, says the Gemara? You can eat it with milk. Take that fish, you could spread a milky cream on top of it, and you can eat it. So the transfer, and this is where the Gemara introduces the concept of nat bar nat, there were two transfers of taste. It went from fish into the plate, that's one transfer, and then it went from the plate into the meat, into the fish, excuse me, the second transfer. At that point, if at the end of the second transfer you don't have any prohibited item, meaning there's no milk or meat together, it's just meat in a piece of fish, or meat in a potato, or meat in an egg, if at that point everything is still okay, then that item remains parv. So parv does it remain that you can eat it directly with milk. That's what the Gemara says, straight out of the Gemara.
So the two transfers are the fact that it was from the pot, the fish into the plate.
Correct. In the case of the Gemara, it went from a plate, went from a steak onto a plate.
Okay.
So meat into plate, and then plate into onto fish, where the fish was then subsequently put on that same plate.
If you wash the plate.
Right. Otherwise, you have real meat on it. So this would be, it would be analogous to cooking meat in a pot, and then subsequently, you know, frying. The quiche example, which I'll mention in a second, is what happened. You're grilling.
So if you cook a far food in a meat pot, it still stays the state of being
far. Well, that's what the Gemara says, at the starting point of our discussion, yes. The Gemara says, because there were two transfers, it went from your meat into your pot, that's one transfer, now I have fleishig atam, fleishig taste in my pot, and then it goes from my pot into my par food, that food remains par. That's what the Gemara says, correct. I don't want to answer anything halacha l'maisa because I'm only halfway through the sheet. There's still more to go.
Okay.
But technically, as far as the Gemara says, yes.
Make a difference with metal or glass, like cornware?
I don't think so. Glass would be better because glass doesn't really absorb taste. But we'll keep it in metal, which clearly does absorb. Glass would be easier to deal with. I always forget. I can't keep straight. What's concerned? Corningware is a form of glass?
Corningware has a
hard
plate and glass.
Sorry, yeah. And that was different. I'm just going to stay away from that. The Gemara doesn't say that. No, the Gemara says if you put your fish on that plate, that can now be eaten with With the, now we're gonna, the accidental part is what we're gonna, that's where the halacha is gonna come in, exactly how we deal with it.
So it's also, you know.
You can, yeah, let's I'm gonna keep that out because that's, now the second transfer, I just wanna, the little parentheses that I have there under the letter one, it has to be that after the second transfer it's still mutter, it's still okay. So that, for example, if I cooked milk in a meat pot, so we don't say this rule of two transfers, that it went, the meat taste went from the meat into my pot, and then from my pot into my milk, we don't say, well, that's two transfers. If on the second transfer, the taste is combining with something which is forbidden, there's actual milk in the pot, then that's a problem. It's only when after the second transfer, it's still mutter. After the second transfer, I have an egg with meat taste in it. That's okay, there's no problem with having an egg with meat taste in it, so the egg remains parv at that point. Yeah. That's not shleishig. That is parv. Remains parv. Now, how do we deal with this halacha l'maaseh? How do we actually deal with this? So there's a major, major dispute amongst the Rishonim and amongst the Poskim how this comes out. The case of the Gemara dealt with a plate. Didn't deal with cooking. So the discussion in the Rishonim in terms of what we take out of this is maybe the Gemara is only being lenient because there was no actual cooking going on. The transfer was only in a weaker state on a hot plate, food onto a plate, plate back into fish, maybe cooking would be different. We're going to make those distinctions between whether or not you boil or grill or fry, which we'll get into. There's also, I just want to throw out some of the discussion issues without confusing the matter too much, then just get into the halacha. If my wife, when she makes a quiche, you take spinach, you frozen spinach, you put it in your pot. There's no water base; it's just frying up in the pan in its own juices, basically. So there, the taste goes directly from the pot into your spinach. When you boil a potato, there's a third medium involved. There's a water medium, so that the taste went from my meat into my pot. That happened a couple hours ago. Now it goes from my pot into my water into my potato. So there's a distinction also made in terms of how we apply this in terms of what are you cooking? Are you grilling something? Are you frying something? Or are you boiling something? How many different mediums, how many different times does it transfer? But just introducing those, is that's part of the discussion which we're not going to get into in great detail. The Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, and the Ramah argue here. The Sfardim are very, very lenient on this. They hold any time you have a second transfer, it's entirely parv, exactly straight out of what the Gemara says, and you can do whatever you want with it. So that if you have a pot that's been cooked, even though it's been within 24 hours, you had meat cooked in a pot, meat goes into the walls of the pot, and you cook within 24 hours, cook anything up that's parv in that food is entirely parv, and can be eaten with whatever they want. That's what the Mechaber passes. The Ramah and Ashkenazim are much more stringent. You can ask your local Orthodox Sephardi rabbi if you, I think that's what the Shulchan, that's what he says, right? That's what I believe he says. Ashkenazim are much more stringent. The Ashkenazic practice says as follows. The Ramah says you're not allowed to intentionally rely on this. You are not allowed to rely on this principle called not bar not, that on a second transfer, it's still considered parv. And you can't purposely do that. Which would mean as follows. A par food, our potato or our fish, is cooked, fried, or boiled in a meat ben yomo pot. In English meaning, I cooked meat in a pot, cleaned it out, and within 24 hours, boil up a potato, spinach, broccoli, whatever I cook in that pot, you are not allowed to eat that with dairy foods. Even though it's a par food has been cooked in a meat pot, we would consider that meat. Now, when I say we consider that meat, it's in a much less level than the meat that we consider the potato actually cooked with the cholent. All that I mean to say is that you cannot eat that with dairy. So that if you have, on a Thursday night, you're cooking for Shabbos and you cook a meat dish, you clean out your pot, and then you boil up some potatoes or spinach or broccoli or eggs, whatever it is that you make in that same meat pot within 24 hours, that food is labeled meat and that it cannot be eaten with anything dairy. No, certainly not. Certainly, we'll get that in a second. Now, That is only what we consider l'chatchila, meaning I have my potato, my spinach, I'm not allowed to put it or eat it with milk. What happens if I accidentally already mixed it in? I made my quiche already, I took the broccoli which has been made in a meat pot, and I stirred it up into my dairy quiche. So here, now again, really, what's the status of my spinach or broccoli? Really, it's parv, because it had the two transfers. We are stringent not to rely on that l'chatchila. We don't assume that it's parv to eat with dairy, but really, at the end of the day, it is dairy, because there have been two transfers. It transferred once from my meat into my pot, and then from my pot into my spinach or broccoli. So even though it technically is parv, Sfardim actually consider it parv, we are stringent not to eat it directly with milk. But if you already mixed it up with milk, it accidentally got all mixed in, so there we will be more lenient on you, and here is where the distinction comes in, whether or not it was actually boiled or fried or grilled. And this is where things get really confusing, and I wouldn't spend too much time going through this, but just to mention it, if it was boiled in water, but there were three transfers, then we'll be entirely lenient and you're allowed to eat it, even though it's been mixed up into your dairy quiche. If it's been more fried or grilled, we're more stringent, but I would recommend just, if it happens, where you accidentally took something cooked in a ben yomo pot, it's been within 24 hours, and you took a parv item, and you already mixed it into a dairy food item, call your local or rabbi just to work out the exact details. That's already complex based on a whole bunch of different factors, and that's already after the fact. So why don't we work through what you can l'chatchila do in your kitchens on purpose. That's if that happens accidentally and you made a mistake. Because since you cooked it in a ben yomo pot, since you cooked it in a pot that's been within 24 hours, you really should not eat that with dairy. Now, 2i or i, whatever exactly it is. This stringency only applies to eating the parv food directly with dairy. Because again, since there have been two transfers, at the end of the day, what's really the status of my potato? It's parv, because the food can't transfer more than twice. It already went from my meat into my pot, back into my pot, but really it's parv. We are stringent not to eat it directly with dairy, but at the end of the day, the food is parv. And therefore, after you've eaten meat or milk, whichever one you're about to eat, that food is considered inherently parv, and is not bound by whatever it was that you just ate. So that, for example, if I have a meat food, and then my meat potato, I just finished a dairy meal, in the example we've been discussing, so as soon as I finish my dairy meal, let's say on a Friday lunch, you have pizza for lunch. As soon as you finish your pizza, you can then munch on your potatoes, because the potato that you cooked last night, even though it's technically, we treat it as meat, so you shouldn't eat your potato directly with it's a funny example, but you shouldn't eat directly with your pizza if you were so inclined to do. Let's say you had our spinach example, which was cooked in a meat pot. So you couldn't then sprinkle your spinach on top of your pizza, because since the spinach was cooked in a meat pot within 24 hours, so even though it technically has been transferred twice, meat went from the meat into the pot into your spinach, it's technically still pot. We don't need that directly with pizza, but you can eat it right afterwards. It's totally fine. And more importantly, the other way around, where if I had a dairy pot which was used within 24 hours, and I cook eggs or cheese or potatoes in that dairy pot, as soon as I finish my meat meal, I'm allowed to eat that because it doesn't have the status of dairy. It's had the two transfers.
Well, go back to your fish, because even though you put it on the plate, but you can't put really anything on top of the fish that's not going to be going to make the plate tray. The plate is
really such a plate. Okay. Well, let's say you took the fish off the plate. Now, what can I do with the fish? Well, is the fish itself? You know, right.
Going the other way, you did boil potatoes in the dairy pot. To make cold potato salad.
Mm-hmm.
You can't use that with either meal, either with the meat meal or dairy meal.
The pot's been used within 24 hours for dairy? Right now we're assuming the pot's been used within 24 hours for dairy. Right, so I cleaned it out, now I cooked potatoes in it. So those potatoes should not be eaten directly with meat. They could be eaten directly after meat.
24 hours.
That's within. Remember, that's within where you cook 24 hours within. That's with it's with milk that's been cooked within 24 hours.
Well, I shouldn't think.
You should think. Okay, but there still might be hope for your situation based on what happened. Now, the other issue is that you don't have to wait 6 hours after eating that food. Let's say, and again, in my fleishiga pot, I cook a meat dish in my pot Thursday night, clean it out, cook a potato in that. That potato, even though I can't eat that potato directly with milk, but it does not have the status of meat that requires me to wait 6 hours. Because really, at the end of the day, it's parv. Because it was two separate transfers, so it's really technically parv. We don't eat it directly with milk, but it certainly would not come along with a requirement to wait 6 hours. Yeah?
Has 24 hours.
We're about to do that. We didn't do that yet. Okay, let's do that right now. Last thing, and then we'll get back to our two case studies. So all of the above, letter E, all of this above was regards to a meat pot that was a ben yomo. We're all talking about a situation where there are two separate variables here. There's a variable of how much time has gone by since the taste was absorbed into the pot, and a second variable of how many transfers have taken place of the food item. What happens when you put the two together? It's been more than 24 hours since I've cooked in this pot, so the taste is already considered stale, and it went through two transfers. So I took a pot out of my cupboard on Thursday night. The first thing that I'm cooking is some potatoes. When was the last time I used this pot? Last week. It's been much more than 24 hours since I've used this pot. I cook up potatoes. So there are two issues at hand now. Number one, the meat taste that's in my pot is long stale. Number two, it's been two transfers. It went from the meat into my pot, and then from my pot into my potato. I've now put both variables together at the same time. What's the status of my potato now? So here, even the Ashkenazim are makel and lenient to say your potato is entirely parv, so parv that it can be eaten directly with milk. Because there's nothing here. On both accounts, we have leniencies. The fact that it's been more than 24 hours, and the fact that it's been 2 hours. So this double leniency, therefore, allows you to eat this food directly with dairy. What's mistakenly? No, you are allowed. This potato is parv. Milk on your potato. Correct. The only issue is you're not allowed to intentionally cook in the fleishig pot to eat the food with milk. Meaning, what I'm not allowed to do is say on Thursday night or Wednesday night, let's say, I need to make a milchig meal. So I need potatoes for a milchig meal. So I shouldn't use my meat pot, which has not been used in 24 hours, to bake my potatoes, which I am planning on using for a milchig meal. Unless you have no other pot available. Assuming you do, you should not intentionally take out a meat pot, even though I'm only going to be cooking potatoes, because I have the intention of using that for a milchig meal. But if you didn't intentionally do that, and that's why I specifically said I plan on cooking for Shabbos. I have leftover noodles. What can I do with that? When you have that situation of the double leniency, where it's been more than 24 hours, and there are two transfers away from your meat, that can intentionally be put together with cheese. Which we'll summarize in 1 second what this actually means for us. Yeah?
So if you, let's say you made a big pot of pasta.
Yeah.
And you drain it into your colander.
Yes.
And you take it out with like a clean spoon, you put some in the bowl, then you put like cheese on it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this pasta left over and you put it in a Ziploc bag.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally, and you then want to use it, let's say you make pasta salad that you want to serve on your
Shabbos
table with meat.
Right.
Can you do that?
Sure.
Even though you intentionally cooked it in the dairy pot, but you intentionally used it for a dairy meal.
Right. In other words, that would be fine. Leftovers, that would be fine. Because you're planning on doing that. Once you did that, and now it's in your fridge, then that has its double leniency.
You can. Okay.
So bring us back to the two case studies. So what you have in case number one, the question of, I made these noodles in my meat pot Thursday night. I plan on serving them for my Shabbos meal, so I had no intention of using them for a dairy meal. I now have a Ziploc bag of noodles in my fridge that were made in a meat pot. So the question that I would ask is, well, when was the last time you had used that meat pot before cooking your noodles on Thursday night? Most of the time, when I ask that question, the response is, it has been more than 24 hours since I'd used it. Because if it was within 24 hours, it's probably being used right now while you're using the pot. It's been more than 24 hours. So those noodles... So what's the status of those noodles? They're pop. What can I do with them?
Anything
you want. Those noodles are fair game for macaroni and cheese, even though they were cooked in a meat pot. For sure. Not forget your dairy dishes. You could put dairy. You could eat dairy with it. Correct. Exactly. Because when you're thinking of making macaroni and cheese, and you say, "Well, I have this nice meat pot. This would be easier for me. Let me just use this." That you shouldn't do. But if you had used the meat pot because you were planning on either keeping the noodles pyre or because you were planning on serving them for Shabbos, and didn't work out, you are absolutely then allowed. If it has been more than 24 hours, you can then use that and make your macaroni and cheese with it.
Well, you can't take a plate of water and say, "I want to use it for both. I need some potatoes and milk. I need some plate of sugar."
Right. That you shouldn't do.
What about
during
you have a meat pot, you use a dairy spoon, and that can't use it, right?
Can't use what?
Oh, you have a carb pot. Do you use a milk and spoon? Does that make you milk?
When was the last time you used a milk spoon?
If you didn't use either of them,
then that's the first issue. You cannot ruin food with any utensil that hasn't been used in more than 24 hours. Your pot's a different story. Depending on that, that'd be a separate question as to how big was the spoon. That's a different story. But your food for sure would be fine. Food for sure would be fine. Let's just get through these last two things. First, the two cases to distinguish between them. So, in the first case where you made your noodles in a pot and you didn't end up serving them, can you put cheese in them? The answer would be yes, assuming that the pot had not been used in 24 hours. What about the second case of your sorbet? So here you have the issue with the sorbet is you have to assume. Since the sorbet packaging says that this was made manufactured on dairy equipment, on equipment that uses milk and nuts and all the other things, that you can't assume that it's been more than 24 hours since they had run a real dairy run, a line through the machinery. They switch those lines all the time. They run 6 hours on this, they run 6 hours on that. And since it's dairy equipment, which means they clearly use the equipment for dairy regularly, you're not allowed to assume that it's been more than 24 hours since the sorbet had been used on equipment that was 24 hours old. So now I have parve sorbet, which I have to assume has been made on dairy equipment which has been used within 24 hours. So what's the status of parve food from a pot that had been used within 24 hours? Can't use it directly with meat. What about for dessert after your meat? It's totally fine. So it is absolutely permissible. Forget about in the Sephardi homes where they could eat it with their meat. They could actually put the sorbet on their meat. And in Ashkenazic home, you can have dairy equipment parve sorbet for dessert on Shabbos as long as you're not eating it, as long as you clear off your meat, you're allowed to eat that for dessert.
On inflation dishes?
On inflation dishes. Now, there's some would be machmir on that. Technically, yes. Rabbi Prince just told me today that there's a prima gaudin that someone pointed out to him that would say that you shouldn't ideally put it on your inflation dishes. Technically, it's a chumrah. But you want to use your plastic, that would be an appropriate place to use your disposables. Not required, but appropriate. Yeah.
I want to be able to ask her question that she asked before.
Yeah. Mrs. Steele, you're up.
The answer confused me. I said, if you make like a big pot of pasta that you're serving with a dairy meal, but the pasta itself is part of like you dump it into your colander and then you take it from your colander and you put it in the dairy bowl, and that's where you put your cheese on. So the pasta stays totally
parve, right.
And it's leftover now, so you take the leftovers and stick it in a
Ziploc
bag in
your
refrigerator.
Right.
Shabbos comes and you want to make
correct.
A pasta salad
go
and
right
with
ahead.
Your meat meal.
Go right ahead, 100%.
You can use a knife and cut off the vegetables to make it come in your salad, put it in with that noodle.
As opposed to your hand to cut up the vegetables? Yeah, you can use it.
Right.
The noodles are parve.
The noodles are perfectly parve. You take a knife, you're going to cut onion in it, red onion, and you're going to cut green red pepper.
What kind of knife are you using? A dairy knife, a flesh knife? Right, the noodles are parve. The noodles are parve. We are stringent not to eat those noodles directly with meat in that case. That's a stringency. The noodles are parve. Right, you can eat it with meat.
I shouldn't like make it with that intention. Like, if my kids were going to make some kind of pasta and we're going to eat it all, and it's not going to be left over, if it's left over, I'm still going to eat it the same way, but that doesn't happen, and they're left, I don't have to put it in the
plate. 100%. 100%.
But it should not be my intention to do it.
Right. That is all, as long as it didn't go onto the table already with the milk, which is a different sort of, 100%.
But as long as it's not my intention, like,
right.
Yeah. I'm
sure I have confused you all. Anyways, that's right. And next week I want to do we'll do the knives and ovens also, how that works. Yeah.